This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
For the latest in movie news and box office reports, welcome to the Cinema Recap Podcast. And now for your hosts, your friends and mine, John Bonham and Mark Jadson.
All right, and welcome to your weekly edition of Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, John Bonham, joined by Mark Jackson. Mark, coming back from a holiday weekend, did you get a chance to, well, I know we were talking about it. I think we both were in the same boat of just laying low, which, honestly, that's all I want to do on my days off, my extra days off, that is, nowadays. It's just like relax and not be busy.
I'm pretty much the same way, man. You know, especially if I know that I might have a couple weekends where I really gotta conserve my energy. Now I'm making it sound like, you know, I'm 45, but when you get older, sometimes you just kind of need to kind of pack in tightly all your energy and put it towards, you know, things that A, mean a lot, but B, if you got things coming up like a weekend or so down the line, you know you got to be up for them. So it's like, hey, let me get a little extra bit of sleep here. You know, if I can go to bed at 10:30, if I literally have nothing to do, that's kind of where I'm at right now, to be honest. But I don't mind it, you know?
Yeah, man, I'm in the exact same boat. Yeah, yeah, I think the our fireworks display was a little delayed. So we were up on our rooftop just having a couple drinks. And 10 o'clock rolled around. And I looked at my girlfriend. I was like, you want to get out of here?
Yep.
And, you know, I've seen enough fireworks displays in my life.
There you go. Once you've seen, I'd say, two, maybe three, it's like they all – sorry if I'm making anyone mad, but they all seem kind of the same at some point. So they just don't do it for me. I just rather would not deal with all the traffic that a lot of places get.
Oh, yeah, it's just not worth it at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But, well, yeah, I guess I suppose we can go ahead and dive into some movie talk here.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone!
Well, I guess we can start off, since I spent most of my weekend binge-watching the entire season of Stranger Things, I guess I can make another effort to get you to watch some Netflix, Mark.
We've been talking about this for a long, long time, so I still haven't put my best foot forward, to be honest, but I guess it's a perfect segue into our first little bit of news where, you know, we were just chatting before the pod, and Netflix looks like they're planning on cutting back a lot of their movie spending, mainly in light of what happened with Triple Frontier, which I remember was talking about it. I haven't seen that yet. I know you did, and you kind of liked it, if I remember enough, but it wasn't anything mind-blowing, but yeah, they spent $115 million on that movie, but apparently it didn't really get the money back like they thought it would, and I don't know exactly how they're calculating that. But yeah, moving forward, I think they say they want to pay a little more attention to where their money and their efforts are going.
They spent $115 million on that?
If I'm looking at the number right, $115 million is what I've been seeing floated around a lot. They said they spent $115 million. I don't know if that's just pure on marketing. I can't think it's just marketing, but I'm guessing, you know, paying the bills and all that stuff. So in totality, they're calling it $115
million. Oh, my God, man. That's like superhero movie money.
Yeah, I mean, again, I have not seen the movie, so I can't say for certain. But, you know, it seems like that same kind of movie, you know, could be made for, I don't know, $50 million with like the marketing involved and stuff too. So I'm surprised that they have that tag for it.
I would guess they spent a monster chunk of that budget on just getting the stars they locked in for it.
Sure.
But man, I mean, and it's kind of hard to quantify, I think, just because it was released on Netflix, but
right.
It's the kind of movie you expect, you know, to be solid. Then it winds up opening to like $15 million.
Yep.
And you know it's not going to come anywhere close to getting its budget back. So it's brutal numbers.
Yeah.
Let's see here. I think it was today it was announced by Vin Diesel that Helen Mirren and Charlize Theron are going to be returning for Fast 9. And Man, I got to be honest. They're doing way too much with these movies. I mean, like, I think there were three other actors and actresses I was reading, just smaller name people that were also added to it.
Sure.
I mean, like, it just feels so overcomplicated. And instead of trying to simplify things a little bit, they're just trying to stack in every star that they can find. So I think they're just going down a worse and worse path here for the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, we've chatted a little bit about some of the additions they've made. I know a couple weeks ago we chatted about them getting John Cena. We'll see if he's kind of going to join, La Familia, or if he's going to be maybe like a side villain or something. Not sure about that. But, yeah, you know, I want to say, at least to me, the series itself peaked with 5, though 6 is still kind of fun. And I really still like, 7. There are some really, really good moments in 7. But, unfortunately, once Walker passed away, I feel like that's, they did lose a huge, huge part of what made those MovieCon special. So I just, seeing 8 was fine, but, it definitely felt like it was getting long in the tooth then. So I don't know, maybe my interest will be semi-stoked with another trailer. I know that they've got 2 more of these to go, and I'm guessing that, by leading with Theron, obviously there hasn't been seen, her body hasn't been seen or anything, so she's still alive. I imagine she's going to be like the big baddie to try to take us home and cap these movies off. But yeah, I'm just kind of blah on it right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go see him just because I love the franchise so much. But oh man, 8 was just such a step in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
So speaking of movies that Dwayne Johnson is a part of, just reading a little earlier that a movie called Red Notice that he was going to be filming for Universal is actually going to be shifting to Netflix. And I didn't know anything about this one, but then I was reading that it's also going to star Ryan Reynolds and Gal Gadot.
Mm.
So, I mean, pretty intrigued by that. I think it's going to be an action comedy because Johnson is reteaming with Skyscraper and Central Intelligence director, I think, Ross and Thurber.
Yeah.
So, honestly, I feel like both of those movies have not been up to par, so I can't really guess that this is going to be something great. I'm thinking it's probably just going to be, more like the Central Intelligence line of just like a goofy comedy, but I think it's about like, I think Johnson's an Interpol agent tracking down like the most wanted art thief in the world, so I'm not too sure about that one.
Yeah, I remember chatting a little bit about Skyscraper when it came out. I mean, I think it kind of, that movie, it leans into itself a little bit, but at the same time, it still is probably a little more overly serious than it needs to be. And Central Intelligence, I guess, was fine, but a lot of these movies, it is him, doing a lot of the same things, and I imagine they're probably going to have some back and forth with him and Reynolds, and Gal Gadot certainly looks stunning and whatnot. But yeah, I don't know. He's just, The Rock is The Rock, at this point. Every now and then I think he could still probably do a super interesting movie, but I think the bulk of this stuff, really, to be honest, is just, it's just there. It's very, very, cookie cutter, so it is what it is.
Yeah, it's almost like he's kind of just, he's just continually playing into his own stereotype, which, I mean, I guess it's working out okay for him, but
yeah.
I mean, sooner or later he's going to jump the shark.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. So, you saw Brightburn, right?
I did see Brightburn, yep.
Yep, and you're telling me that there are sequel discussions in the works. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Is it a movie that needs a sequel? Are you going to be excited for this one?
I would say semi-excited. I remember writing about it on thatmomentin.com, and I was kind of overall, middling on it. I think it's got some really impressive kill scenes and action scenes, but the storytelling itself is an origin story, but at the same time, it doesn't really feel like it was paced all that well. I think there's a lot more pieces that they probably could have went into, but now since they have this out of the way, I do think the ending sets itself up to have really like a mirrored alternate universe. They've got many different components where, they can introduce maybe like a a dark Wonder Woman, or, you know, I don't know. I think I heard something about a dark Aquaman. And lo and behold, I have not seen the movie, but now I'm kind of enticed to go watch it. I think it has a connection to a movie called Super that starred, why am I zoning out? It's one of my favorite shows ever, The Office, Rainn Wilson. He was like the, he was a star of that movie. Very, very dark superhero movie, but I'm guessing it sounds like that could also take place in that same universe. So, yeah, you know, I would be intrigued with the sequel. I will say that for sure.
Rainn Wilson was in a dark superhero movie?
Yep, it was called Super in 2010, and I was actually looking at our site, seeing anyone had covered it. Maybe one of these days I might watch it and, you know, just give my brief thoughts on it or something. But, yeah, I heard it's kind of a little bit of a sleeper. It didn't make a lot of money when it came out, but it's action comedy drama. I hear it's very dark, very violent, but also directed by James Gunn and written by him too. So
interesting.
Yeah, 96 minutes, came out 2010. So I might have to give it a watch at some point.
Yeah, it could be worthwhile, closer to the Brightburn 2 release.
Right.
All right, let's see what else we got here. So Samuel L. Jackson is going to be starring in Chris Rock's Saw reboot. And, I mean, anytime Samuel L. Jackson's in something, you got my attention. You know, I didn't really care too much for, you know, a Saw reboot per se, and so quickly at that. And we don't really know what Chris Rock's role is. Like, is he just producing it? He's not actually going to direct it, is he?
I don't think he's going to direct. He's going to produce, but he's actually going to star, apparently, according to Screen Rant. He's going to be starring as a police detective who's investigating the string of grisly crimes. Basically sounds like Danny Glover's character from the first movie. It looks like currently they're tagging Jackson to co-star as Chris Rock's on-screen father. So he's not going to be the star. He's probably very much going to be a supporting character. They've got other people they've announced too. I'm not too familiar with all these people, but Max Minghella, I think he's like in The Handmaid's Tale. And again, I'm not huge on TV, so I don't know much about him, unfortunately, but I think he's a pretty good guy. Marisol Nichols is in it too. But yeah, not starring. Looks like Rock's going to be the star, which I don't know. I'd probably have to see some I'd have to see a little bit of footage first before you have me fully sold on Chris Rock. I'm just trying to remember him like doing dramatic stuff. Nothing immediately comes to my mind. If I think about it hard enough, maybe it will, but I don't know. We'll see. It's gotta be semi-interesting two leads, I guess.
I'll be interested to watch a trailer, and then I think that'll kind of dictate where my level of interest for the movie goes.
Okay. I think I'm with you on that one.
Alrighty. Let's see here. So you're telling me that there might be a White Chicks 2?
It's up in the air. So a couple days ago, Terry Crews, I totally forget what role he had in White Chicks. It's been so long. It was 2004. I was 14 years old when the movie came out. But, you know, it wasn't ahead of its time or anything, but it's just, I think it's one of those movies that has kind of become a cult kind of classic in the last couple of years, or maybe over the last 10 years. But yeah, Terry Crews has said the White Chicks 2 is definitely going to happen. Marlon Wayans came out a couple hours ago and said that nothing's been confirmed yet. You know, very much in the kind of we'll wait and see stages. But it sounds like the light could be there. And I think, you know, if enough people start talking, they'll probably be able to get a budget for it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I never saw the first one, so I don't really – I'm not too sure what my feelings on a sequel would be. But, is this one that you'd be checking out yourself?
I don't know, man. It's been so, so long since I sat down and watched this movie. I'm just looking at a couple of stills right now, and if you've got some time, like, it's – I don't know what they were thinking in 2004, but even then, it's just, I don't know. I guess I'll check it out just for kind of the novelty, and my mind is semi-interested. Chances are it's probably going to be in the same vein of like Dumb and Dumber 2 and stuff where,
oh God, yeah.
You know, it maybe came too late, but I mean, the first movie wasn't that good really to start with. They're saying they could go in some different routes because I don't know if they can do the same exact thing of, you know, kind of spoofing Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan. That's 16 years ago. That would age if they did it the exact same way. And I think we're in a different kind of frame of mind society-wise now. But I don't know. You could probably take some stabs at, you know, our digital heavy culture and Instagram and stuff and, you know, maybe make some statements there. But I don't know. My gut says no. I probably still wouldn't be interested, but yeah. I don't know. My curiosity might get me if they did come out with something.
Yeah, be interesting to see what happens with that one. Let's see here. So Todd Phillips looks like he was talking about his upcoming Joker film a little bit, and he said it's not going to follow the comics at all. Based on the preview so far, that's not entirely surprising, but I've got to imagine that's going to upset a lot of fans. They were hoping it was going to tie into the upcoming Batman movie somehow.
Yeah, you know, I'm just kind of glancing at the headlines here, and he says he expects the backlash from a lot of the hardcore, you know, diehard fans and whatnot if it's not going to follow the comic. And I think we've had this conversation maybe a couple months before. You know, I'm all for them doing just something that has no connection whatsoever to Batman. You know, use Joker if you want, but if you don't want to, you know, connect it with, you know, what we've already seen before, I'm cool with it. You know, I don't have any issue whatsoever. Make it different. You know, if you want to, you know, make a very, you know, drama-filled, you know, dark story, sounds like that's what we're going to get. I'm all for it. You know, we don't have – I don't even want it to – be like a supervillain movie or a superhero movie. You know, I would much rather watch it and I'd be like, wow, I'm just watching a drama that happens to involve the Joker.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Joker's a strong enough character to stand alone, you know, on his own for, you know, at least a single movie. So I have no problem with it not being related, and I don't follow the comics to begin with, so I wouldn't even really, you know what, I guess, where they'd be breaking character at all.
Yeah, and, you know, ultimately, you know, let Suicide Squad or that, you know, DC stuff handle that. I think if I read this right, there's really no connection to any of that whatsoever. So if they want to tackle the Joker and make sure, you know, there's enough in there to, you know, I don't know, get in another Justice League, let them handle that side of it. Let's just see, you know, something that doesn't exist from the Joker that we've seen a lot. So I'm all for it.
God, no kidding, man. Get away from the Suicide Squad. all right, our last bit of news is in regards to the upcoming Lion King film. I believe you said that they released some information about the runtime, and it's going to be 20 minutes longer than the original.
29 minutes, actually, longer.
29?
Than the original. I don't think it necessarily means that they're going to add in different, you know, plot points or anything. I don't know if it's just, you know, if it's almost like, I guess to make the comparison, you know, inflation when you had money in 1994, is it worth as much now or something? Like if you lift the exact same movie and make it, you know, photorealistic CGI now, like can you follow it beat for beat or is it just naturally, you know, what we're trying to do? Is it going to increase the runtime? For some reason, I feel it's the latter, and I'm reading some stuff where it doesn't look like the actual story is going to be the same, but it's not going to be a shot-for-shot remake. So there might be some different setups, some different scenery, but I don't think it necessarily means that the story itself is going to have, like, a new character or any new side plots or anything.
Yeah, I would guess they're probably just going to extend some of the action sequences a little bit.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I think that's what a modern day audience might want. But, yeah, I mean, it's such a layup. Well, I mean, not to say a layup, I'm sure a lot of, you know, tireless work and effort goes into it, but I mean, you could honestly do a shot for shot remake and people would be thrilled and they'd say it was fantastic. It's, you know, it's an easy story that people love that, you know, impacts a lot of people's childhood. So if, I mean, for this one, I would say, you know, maybe play it a little close to the chest and don't do anything crazy. And you're looking at a $1 billion hit.
Exactly. You know, it's like a three putt. You know, it's right there. I really can't see any way where this, like, you know, fails. It won't fail commercially, but I can't even really see it fail critically. You know, I think the worst people say, well, you know, it doesn't do anything different than what the 1994 movie did, but it, mm-hmm. that's probably not going to be a bad thing. You know, it's going to be an update. I think kids are going to love it. I'm sure, you know, parents now who grew up in 1994, they're probably going to like it a lot too. So I'm mm-hmm. with you. You know, it seems like an easy IP to readapt into a CGI 2019 world. And yeah, you know, money's going to be printed, and it probably is best that they don't do a whole too much. Let's just see these characters that we, you know, are indebted and emblazoned to our childhood. Let's see them, you know, fully realized. And, you know, sometimes that's enough. I think the Jungle Book kind of proved that a little too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, they brought Favreau back for that reason, that he saw success with the Jungle Book. So I would expect a pretty similar formula.
Yeah.
All right, well, that'll wrap up the real news for today, but we will go ahead and pause for a couple minutes and hear about some friendly podcasts of thatmomentin.com.
We'll return after these announcements.
Hi, this is Tony, the host of the Flicks X-Rayed podcast. Each week, I am joined by guests.
Ew.
Hello.
Yo.
Why, hello there.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
And we have a roundtable discussion where we dig deep and X-ray a bunch of our favorite films and some really terrible ones, too. We really like to go back and take a look at films that may be forgotten, maybe in the past, and still lovable films. If you want, you can follow us on all the major platforms, iTunes, Google, Stitcher.
If you want to find out more, you can find us online at www.flixxray.com.
And you can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram if you want to reach out to us. Good night, Internet.
Hey, this is Jacob Haller. In my podcast, Tell Me About Your Song, I call up all kinds of songwriters, jazz, rock, folk, electronica, whatever, and all levels of experience from just starting out to established national acts, and I ask them to talk about a song they wrote for about 20 minutes. So if you're interested in hearing creative folks talk about what they do, then check it out at tellmeaboutyoursong.com. Thanks.
Right, and welcome back to Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, Mark and John. And Mark, should we go ahead and dive into the weekend recap?
Let's do it to it.
I'm putting the burden of lousy movies back on you. It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh, the jig is up.
All right, well, we're going to actually start just a bit outside of the top five for the weekend of July 5th through 7th, and that is because a movie that you saw is in the number 6 spot. So I'll let you take this one away.
Yep, so Midsommar, some people are pronouncing it Midsommar. I think technically you could pronounce it both ways, but I think I've heard enough people say Midsommar, so that's what I'm going to roll with. Midsommar came in at number 6, just a little over $6.3 million, and essentially it's the story of a young female, 23-ish grad student, played by Florence Pugh. She's just experienced some immense tragic loss, you know, so her mind's kind of getting taken for a whirl. She's also trying to keep this relationship alive with their boyfriend, played by Jack Rayner. He's done a lot of different things. But essentially, you know, they're both in grad school, and the funny thing is, Florence's boyfriend wants to break up, but he kind of feel like a jerk in doing so, since he just came off of, you know, again, going through this tragedy. But he wants to go and have a bro trip with his graduate student, you know, guys in Sweden. But he's guilty, and he decides to invite his girlfriend, Danny, and they all end up making their way to Sweden per one of their friends who is Swedish, and he wants to show them this 9-day celebration. Forget exactly what it's called. Essentially, it's a festival, but, you know, they're popping pills, they're having a good time, they're really kind of experiencing the locale. It's bathed in brightness, and once things start getting and going and, start to reveal themselves. It's very realistic. It's not so much the celebration that they were expecting. So that is Midsommar, directed by Ari Aster, who's done a movie we both pretty much really loved last year in Hereditary. Super dark movie, but he's doing this and he's back for the sequel. You have not seen this, if I remember correctly, right?
That is correct.
All right. So this movie is best experienced if you don't know a whole bunch about it, or at least just the basics for the most part. I always hate comparing movies, but I think kind of comparing things is the way we kind of make sense of a lot of things and anything we do in life. So I will say this with Midsommar. I don't think it's as good of a movie as Hereditary, but with that said, I think it's a better directed movie, and I think that I will be much more apt to rewatch this movie than I will Hereditary, just because Hereditary is so damn dark.
Yeah, so I read, so I started seeing some articles online about Midsommar and like how grisly some of the parts were. So I read like a plot synopsis of the movie, and I read about what some of those parts in particular were, just because I was so curious. And what was your take from that regard? Like, was it pretty tough to watch?
At times I would say so. It's not necessarily like people just getting, maimed left and right, like a Eli Roth or, pick your poison type of movie from like the mid-2000s. But there are some, I would say overall it's probably a little more gorier than Hereditary is. But I will say that it's not something that immediately turned me off or anything. It's just, Ari Aster has a really, really interesting way of kind of just burning specific scenes and burning specific moments in a person's head. And he has at least three or four of those scenes in this movie yet again. I don't know if there's anything that kind of tops that moment from Hereditary, that happens in the first 30 minutes, or even like the last moment where a woman's kind of going through a piano wire in her neck. But there's some very, very intense sequences for sure in this movie. But with that said, there's a lot of levity and there's some humor in this movie too, and a lot of it is intentional. So I would say it's very much a kind of lighter movie. I hesitate to say it's dark humor. It's just very bizarre humor. A lot of that comes from Will Poulter. He's kind of like the quintessential American who just wants to have a good time and, screw some Swedish women. So he's got some comedic moments for sure. But yeah, it can be very intentionally funny a lot of times. I would say the first maybe 30 or 40 minutes, kind of a little more slower than I would have liked. I don't necessarily hate it, but it does take a little bit of time to build things, and it's not always as cohesive as maybe I would like. I think with Hereditary, there's a much more of a through line that you get from beginning to end. Both these movies kind of tackle grief, but this is kind of a breakup movie, or at least kind of like at its best, it's a movie where I think the main statement is, you got to be all the way in on someone. If you're not, you're wasting time, they're wasting time, and it's not good for anyone. At its worst, though, it's kind of like a fuzzy, hazy, cults are bad, but there's maybe some things that we can take good from them, etc. I just don't feel like it was as tightly written as his last movie, which he also wrote, too, in Hereditary. So I think it lacks a little bit of like focus on the script then, but the last probably 40 minutes are just unique. And the direction itself, like I said, I think it's a better directed movie. If you go ahead and watch this movie, John, I think there are going to be some shots that are, really going to, catch your breath, because the scenery is awesome. I hope that it does get some attention end of the year at the very least for, cinematography direction would be great too. Florence Pugh, I thought, was outstanding. If not as good as Colette, then she's awfully close, especially for 23. She's got a lot of stuff on her plate in this movie, and she handles it extremely well. I don't want to spoil too much. definitely not a movie everyone has seen, making $6.3 million. I would say if you liked, you know, Hereditary, you may not love Midsommar as much, but there is still some pretty original things. He definitely bites some stuff from other movies, but I think that the fact that he can, you know, make two pretty unique movies that have kind of the similar theme, but still distinctly different, bodes well for his future. So, yeah, I still highly recommend it.
All right. Well, yeah, high praise. So it's going to be going to have to be one I check out, I think.
Yeah, you should. We both had pretty good things to say about, you know, Hereditary, so I'd be interested to kind of hear your thoughts on the movie for sure.
Yeah, sounds good, man. All right, well, with that, we'll go ahead and dive into the top five here. Coming in at the five spot, we've got Aladdin with another $7.5 million, which brings it up to $922 million worldwide. So, inching, you know, ever closer to that billion-dollar number. Let's see here. We've got Annabelle down two spots to number four with $9.4 million. We've got Yesterday staying strong in the three spot in its second week with just a hair over $10 million. Toy Story 4 officially dethroned in the number two spot with just a little under $34 million, bringing its worldwide gross to about $650 million at this point. So cruising along quite nicely in its third week. And Mark, I will let you take it home with the number one spot.
Yeah, so number one is, of course, big shocker, Spider-Man Far From Home. It took over $90 million in its weekend. That's Friday through Sunday. 92.5 is kind of like the official number. But I think in totality, since it released right around July 3rd, 4th, it made a whopping $185 million. And the reception's been pretty good.
Yeah, it's... And I can't remember, was this supposed to be the culmination of Phase 3 or the kickoff of Phase 4?
The culmination of Phase 3, but it's very much supposed to be an instigator into Phase 4. So, I did watch this on Saturday, and essentially this picks up relatively right after Avengers Endgame. You know, we see Peter Parker, Tom Holland, back again as Spider-Man. Basically... a lot of people have experienced what they deem in their Spider-Man world as the blip. That's just another name for the snap or the decimation. So if I'm understanding this correctly, you know, people have disappeared, but they've reappeared, but a lot of them still are the same age. So they still have to go through high school and get that stuff taken care of, get their diploma and whatnot. So that's how we see a lot of his friends. Conveniently, I think all of them that are key in this movie were Snap, so you know, they're all together and whatnot. But yeah, Spider-Man, I presume it's the summer, he goes off to Europe on a class trip. You know, he with his friend Ned, he is super into Mary Jane, played by Zendaya. You know, he really wants to tell her how he feels and, you know, kind of get everything off his chest, you know, after everything he's been through. He really just wants to be a kid. You know, this kid has fought against Thanos and, you know, kind of had to see one of his mentors, you know, really put his life on the line, literally, to save the universe. So, you know, I don't think it shocks anyone that he just wants to be Peter Parker for a little bit. He wants to leave his suit at home. He just wants to have a good time. But, of course, when you're a hero, things happen. And these elementals are popping up starting in Mexico, and no one really knows what they're after exactly. But they're here, and they're causing destruction. And we get our first shot of Quentin Beck, a.k.a. Mysterio, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, who's trying to ward these off. The next place where one of these is going is to Italy, where Spider-Man and his class are at. So they rendezvous Mysterio and Fury and Spider-Man, and there's kind of our movie. You know, he's got to take down these elementals, this fire elemental, to, you know, hopefully get back to what he wants to do, which is not be Spider-Man for a little bit. I saw this movie, obviously, and I gotta say, I really, really liked it. I don't love it, but I think I really, really like it. There's some pieces that start off in, I'd say, the first, 30 minutes where it can be a little bit slow, and it's definitely not, it doesn't feel like an MCU movie. It's very much a high school movie, so that might be off-putting to some. They definitely lean into the humor a lot. It's pretty funny. Maybe they overdo it just a little bit. But once it finds its footing, I would say around maybe the 50-minute mark where some things really start to come to light, it's very much a barreling conclusion to the end. It's about a two-hour, I think, a 10-minute movie. The pacing is not great, but it's good enough. And I don't really want to spoil much because I still feel like you're going to see it at some point. So all I really want to say is Jake Gyllenhaal is awesome in this movie. Not a shock. He's done a whole bunch this entire decade and even before that, but definitely this decade. He's got an interesting part playing Mysterio. I will put it at that. They do a pretty compelling job of, you know, using Spider-Man as, again, the instigator for what's going to come in Phase 4, but they also kind of tie a lot back, and I mean a lot back, to Iron Man. There are many different callbacks. There are specific plot instances where they're very much using, you know, Tony Stark and kind of using his I don't want to say his likeness, but his just ideas and his ideology and just his standing in the universe to really, you know, drive home this last phase of Marvel as we know it. So they use him in a very, very interesting way, juxtapositioned alongside Jake Gyllenhaal, that makes for a lot of the interesting moments in the movie. That's all I'll say on that front.
Okay. So is that your Jake Gyllenhaal bias talking, or is he that good in the movie?
I think he's that good in the movie, but with that said, I don't know if I would call him a strong villain. And I might have spoiled some things there, but I think the real fans probably know that, you know, his role is very much shrouded in mystery. I mean, it's Mysterio, so I doubt he would go an entire movie being Spider-Man's, you know, Ace Coon Boom. So that might be a little bit of a spoiler. I'm not going to delve into anything, though, in regards to how they get to that point. I would just say it caught me off guard. But then again, I'm not a comic book nerd or very much in tune to everything, so maybe that's the reason also caught me off guard. But I think they did it in a pretty compelling way. And it definitely, once that happens, it leads to some super interesting visual scenes. There's one scene in the movie where if we were kind of to take a poll at the end of the year, like, hey, what are some of your top scenes of the year, Mark? This movie would have one of them for sure. If you see it, I think you'll know what I'm talking about, but that's all I'll say. And again, if I got a little bit too much into spoilers, I apologize, but I think everyone kind of generally knew that Mysterio, as much as they kind of pushed him as, yeah, he's going to be right alongside Spider-Man, there's another side to that, so big apologies, okay. But didn't spoil exactly how it happened.
Okay. Well, I at least knew that, so didn't spoil anything for
okay.
me.
Okay, cool.
Just a random side note, interesting thought with, you know, rated as one of the best scenes of the year, in your opinion. We should talk about our favorite movie scenes of the year at the end of 2018.
Okay. We should do that. Yeah. That's, yeah.
I like that idea.
I'm always good occasionally for a good idea every now and then. But just to kind of put a small little bow on Far From Home, like, again, I don't want to get too much into the weeds here. I think it's pretty good. I would say maybe it's slightly underneath Homecoming. I think Homecoming did have a better overall villain, but they've got the potential here to do some interesting things in Phase 4. I will just kind of say that. And again, they tie a lot back into Iron Man, his kind of whole approach and personality and how he kind of did things on his own terms. This is very much the opposite. I will just leave it at that, but they've got the opportunity to do a couple of different unique things here and, you know, at least kind of position these movies in Phase 4 to maybe not be so much like on the big bad. I mean, we're going to get that at some point. I still don't know if anything can, you know, honestly top Thanos, but I do think that they can use kind of Spider-Man and some of his lore. I mean, I don't think it's a huge leap to say that Spider-Man probably has the best villains remaining out of any other of their MCU characters. Do you think that's a stretch, or?
I don't think so. I mean, they're pretty untouched in, this phase of the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
So they can definitely circle back to, you know, like Doc Ock and Green Goblin. So I don't think that's a stretch at all.
Yeah.
Get Venom involved.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if that comes to fruition and, you know, there's some type of flexibility worked around, they could do that. Even some of the ones that I feel like don't get a whole bunch of deep love, but I kind of like in the Spider-Man lore, like Scorpion or Shocker. I wouldn't mind seeing some of those guys in some capacity, but yeah, I'll just say they have the ability, I think, to do some go in interesting ways, starting with Phase 4 and Spider-Man. And he can really, I mean, I think it's going to be the fulcrum for a lot of what they do. So mm-hmm. We'll see how it goes.
Speaking of Spider-Man, I finally watched Into the Spider-Verse.
It's on Netflix, right?
Yeah, it's delightful.
It's on Netflix, right?
Yeah, have you seen it yet?
I've not. Okay. I've got to put that on my docket, too. There's a lot of things that I got to do over the next couple of weeks. But if Spider-Verse is on Netflix, then I've got no excuse not to fire up Netflix and watch it.
Finally get you on Netflix, hopefully. We'll see.
I will have one question, though. Is it – I mean, it had universal praise, you know, for the movie last year. I mean, a lot of people are putting it – top 10, I'd say at the minimum, but some were putting it top 5, top 3. I didn't see some lists say it's the best movie of the year, bar none. It won at the Oscars, etc. Do you think it's absolutely deserving of, like, every single accolade?
No, I think the praise was a little too high. But
okay.
It was still, I mean, it's still a really good movie. I thoroughly enjoyed watching it.
Okay. Well, that's still enough for me. You know, I'm gonna make the plunge, or, and I mean by the plunge, turn on my PlayStation 4 and fire up Netflix.
There you go. All right, we'll go ahead and do a real quick run through of what we got coming up this next weekend of July 12th.
Coming soon to theaters.
Not a ton. You know, it's kind of one of those break weekends where after a big blockbuster comes out, nobody wants to follow it up.
Sure.
And the three coming up weeks after, there's pretty big releases each one of those. So this week we got Crawl, which, as far as I understand, is I don't know if they're in Florida, but wherever this small community is located, they get hit with a hurricane,
right.
And it brings along some pretty nasty alligators with it.
The trailer pretty much is super clear with what's going on.
Pretty straightforward.
I think the trailer's. I got a little interest in it. I haven't committed yet to watching it, but if I've got some time, I got some stuff going on Saturday. But if I can maybe catch it like on Friday night or something, I might. It seems like a very, very quick, short horror thriller disaster movie. They're only got about 80 something minutes on it, so I imagine it's going to go right into. Some of the alligator and kill scenes and stuff. So yeah, I'm semi interested. I won't say for sure I'll cover it, but if I'm able to watch, I just might. So we'll see. Seems like a perfect kind of shallows ish 47 meters down, that type of summer
mm-hmm.
movie.
Yeah. And the other one is Stuber, which stars, it's a an action comedy with Kumail Nanjiani and Dave Bautista. Kind of like a buddy cop type situation where Nanjiani is an Uber driver who gets stuck driving around Bautista, who's a Los Angeles detective, hard-nosed type character. So, I'm kind of torn on this because I like Bautista from the Marvel franchise. And sure. I like Nanjiani from Silicon Valley. I think the movie looks pretty bad, but I kind of imagine there's some good laughs mixed in.
So I actually got to see this movie well ahead of time. Was it last? It might have actually been about 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago. So I actually have a post on it on thatmomentin.com if you want to check it out and determine if you got any interest in checking it out, and we can talk about a little bit on the next pod. But yeah, I was able to check it out. Went up live July 4th on thatmomentin.com. So I've watched it, and you know, I will kind of leave my thoughts podcast wise for next week.
Okay, fair enough. And I think that'll wrap up what's coming up next weekend. And before we shut things down, we'll do a our character development section, which is where Mark and I take turns every other week, or every week, hopefully, asking each other a question about our movie likes, our interests, you know, our tastes, just to try to learn a little bit about, you know, one another and what kind of movies we're into and how movies might have had an impact on our lives, if we get that deep, that is.
Getting to know you, getting to know all about you. Getting to like you, getting to hope you like me. Getting to know you, putting it my way, but nicely. You are precisely my cup of tea.
So I was curious, Mark, what is your least favorite movie you've ever seen?
My least favorite movie I've ever seen. Oh man,
yep.
That's a tough one. It's very, very generic. But at the same time, you can go a lot of different routes. You can go a lot of different ways in this. Ah man, the least favorite movie. I'm guessing that's just another way to say what's the worst movie I feel like I've ever seen. Oh, man.
Pretty much, or like something that you just, you know, couldn't get. For example, one that came to mind, and it's not really the worst movie I've ever seen, but I was watching the movie Mirrors, I remember, back in college, with starring Kiefer Sutherland. And there's a part where Amy Smart rips the bottom half of her jaw off.
Huh.
And when she started to do that, I realized that I couldn't watch it. I didn't want to see it, and I just stopped watching the movie. So I made it like 45 minutes through, and then I turned it off.
Just because it was bad. Just because it was just boring.
It was like it was like a gore that I just didn't feel a need to see.
I see. Interesting. Okay. All right. Man, this was not a question that I was anticipating in any way, shape, or form. To me, you know, I'm going to go in a little different route, and I'm going to probably say the worst movie I've seen is something like, I was 14, I was checking out this movie. I'm pretty sure it was on BET, and it was a movie called Soul Plane. It starred Kevin Hart, and it's got like Snoop Dogg in it and stuff. And so here's the thing sometimes about these movies, like when you're younger, you can see certain things and you can find some laughter in them, but deep down you still know this is awful. This is dumb. I mean, it makes fun of everything that I'm against, and it's just bad. It's stereotypical. And the more I kind of think about it now, there's really nothing good whatsoever about that movie. And unfortunately, that was a time where it seemed like you got tons of those movies just back and forth, like. That's one of them. They've got the worst, awful stereotypes in all those movies. But there's another one called, I think, like Who's Your Caddy, where they star all the rappers, and they're really, like, doing literally nothing. It's just they're walking on the golf course. They're making fun of some white people. And then, you know, it's supposed to be funny. And, you know, they're supposed to be, like, the coolest people ever. And, you know, that's the movie for, like, 80 minutes. Those two movies really, really stick out for me a lot as kind of the worst movies I've seen, or they're very, very, I guess, on the absolute low piece on my list. If you gave me like five more minutes, there's probably another movie that I could really, really get to. If I want to go super recent, I would probably say something like The Boy Next Door with Jennifer Lopez. And I'm usually a sucker for these type of movies, you know, the Psycho Stalker. But something about that movie was just off from the get-go. You know, I think with why that movie didn't work was, you know, we heard so much about a lot of these relationships in the past with, you know, this teacher being into this person and whatnot. And to me, it just felt like there was a huge gap in logic where if she just would have, you know, come out and say, yeah, you know, I had a lapse in judgment. You know, something happened inappropriate with this kid. You know, that's the way it is. But the way they kind of just keep on going, Jennifer Lopez is not good in that movie. The kid who plays the crazed Hinge character, it never really feels like he's that crazy, or it's just the way he acts, it is just is off on all levels. That's not a good movie. There's also another one, Truth or Dare, which I brought up. Blumhouse, that's a terrible movie. The logic in that kind of just is off from the get-go, and the graphics are terrible. Even the ending itself is extremely, that's how they end that movie, dumbfounding. So yeah, I don't know if that helped you in any way, shape, or form, but those movies kind of come off my head really, really quickly as the, you know, worst movies I've seen. Also, another movie I'll say, Shut In, that was 2016, starring Naomi Watts. Semi-vain of movies that fall into my guilty pleasure, but I will kid you not, it had one of the worst twists I kind of ever seen. I can't exactly remember it. I have to go back to my review, but that's a bad movie too. So hopefully that kind of answered your question at least a little bit.
Yeah, man, you're starting to get on a roll there.
Like I said, if we actually did like a deep dive pod into maybe if we kept it recent, that would maybe keep me a little more focused. But yeah, I think if you really give me some time, I could probably get going for sure. But hopefully that at least gave people a little bit of intel.
I would say so. So I haven't seen this movie. I think it came out earlier this year, called Serenity, with Matt McConaughey, Anne Hathaway. So I saw an article online that mentioned the twist of the movie. So I just read the synopsis of it to figure out what it was. That sounded like one of the worst plot twists I've ever heard of, where I might have just walked out of the movie. So, yeah, I don't think it's one worth watching, Mark, but take a look at the plot twist and let me know your thoughts later.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's something I got to check out, and I'll get back to you on the next pod.
All right. Sounds good. Anything we should expect from you this week?
Yeah. So I think I'd like to try to get to Crawl. No guarantees, but if I can't get to Crawl, there might be something where I will do like a what to watch or something. I know we've got some ideas kind of floating around our heads as to maybe some one-off special pod that we might do in a couple weeks. So my focus might be on that too. But yeah, I'm hoping to get something up over the next couple of days, whether it's just like a new release or if it's more historical, then we'll see. But yeah.
All right, sounds good. Well, I think that'll do it for this edition of Cinema Recap. But we appreciate everybody joining in, and hopefully we'll be talking to you next week.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Cinema Recap is a proud member of That Moment In Podcast Network. Find all your favorite shows over on the site thatmomentin.com. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, Player FM, Radio Public, Stitcher, Podomatic, everywhere. Just search That Moment In. Thank you all for listening.